Hello, this is Nancy Pippin with the Pantograph for Friday, February the 7th, 2020. And in this morning's headlines, we have a large portion of the front page devoted to Bloomington businesses. Downtown Bloomington businesses change. And there is a large map on the left of the page, upper left, that shows Bloomington business changes. Efforts are underway to fill several vacancies in downtown Bloomington. Now, the area also has added 9 businesses since March. And to the left is a map showing Locust, Mulberry, Market, Monroe, Jefferson, Washington, Front Street, all the way down to Taylor Street. And to the right of these streets, which run apparently look to run west to east or east to west, on the north-south ends would be Roosevelt, Madison, Center Street, Main Street, East Street, and then it goes over to what becomes on the east or the west side would be Prairie Street, Front Street, showing different changes. And there are upwards of 24, at least 24 changes, if not a few more. So you'll want to have, if you're very interested in this, you'll really want to have someone go through with you and talk about these changes that are expressed. Because then we have a small chart, several charts here. One is businesses that opened March of 2019 to the present, and that goes through numbers 1 through 8 and talks about businesses. And then there's a chart of businesses that closed between March to the present, and that goes through numbers 9 through 15 and shows that where those are marked. And these are all pinpointed on this little map. Then we have a chart that lists all of the businesses that have relocated, businesses relocated from March 2019 to the present in the downtown district. And there are, let's see, 2, 4, 6, 8, 9 different groups that have changed. So the article that follows then is Vacancies Temper Hope for Vibrant Downtown. When a new buyer emerged in September with plans to purchase State Farm's original headquarters and spend $40 million to transform the 13-story landmark into 230 luxury loft apartments, the news invigorated Bloomington's downtown district. But since the sale was finalized in October, there has been a lack of visible activity by the new property owner, which is Urbana Equity Properties out of, or Urban Equity Properties out of Rockford. At the structure that has sat vacant for approximately 2 years now, since January of 2018. We are still in the planning stages with the Bloomington Lofts project, the UEP spokesman Jim Haggerty said in a statement emailed to the Pantograph in late January. We should have an update when construction will begin within the next couple of weeks. The lull, however, has been punctuated by 2 vacancies on downtown's Museum Square, creating perhaps a slow leak in the vibrancy balloon. The decline of foot traffic prompted the July 26 closure of the Subway restaurant at 109 West Jefferson, said Dave Wampler, who owned the franchise with his brother Larry and Ross Webb. The CVS store at 210 North Center Street in downtown Bloomington closed January 2nd after leasing for more than 12 years the space occupied by previously by Osco Drug. CVS occupied the store's lease after purchasing all of the freestanding Osco drug stores in January of 2006. It was a big blow for downtown to lose the CVS store, said Downtown Bloomington Association President Jan Lancaster, who owns the Bistro Bar at 316 North Main Street. Also, around the square, Subway is gone, and Haphazard Press moved to a different location. That's all prime real estate. We need to get with those landlords and promote those locations, she said. CVS and Subway were among seven downtown businesses that closed since March of 2019, the city's Economic Development Department said in an email to the Pantograph. Eight businesses have opened over the same time frame, while eight others moved to other downtown spaces. Three others moved out of the district. We're excited to see all the actively participate in continued revitalization of downtown. And heading this this article, including the graph, is graphic designer Doug, a picture of graphic designer Doug DeLong as he walks north on Main Street to downtown Bloomington, in downtown Bloomington on Tuesday. DeLong said the business district on Main Street couldn't be more vibrant, as most of the independent owners are doing quite well. But he is concerned about some vacant buildings, pointing at one of them, which is the main plaza at 303 North Main Street. Now, this article is continued over on page A5, and we'll go over to there now. Ooh, you'll like this picture. It's a picture of the Garlic Press Company. It says, Uptown Covered in Chocolate. The Garlic Press co-owner, Pam Luxon, prepares samples Thursday during an Uptown Covered in Chocolate. Businesses feature discounts as well as special chocolate-themed food and beverage during this event, which is one lively way to get folks in. And here's the continuation of our article on vacancies. Throughout the last year, we have seen a lot of progress with the sale of the State Farm building, the continued redevelopment of the former high school at 510 East Washington, and the opening of many new businesses within the district. Doug DeLong shares Han's enthusiasm over downtown's renewed vibrancy, but worries about the vacancies. It feels like some kind of renaissance, and I think it's largely in our heads. But for whatever the reason, it feels good, said DeLong, who operated a downtown graphics design firm, Osborne and DeLong, for more than 30 years. In April, he sold his building at 102 West Market Street, which doubled as his office and his home, but DeLong still strolls downtown and stops for coffee every day. But I hate the vacancies downtown, said DeLong as he walked in the 300 block of North Main Street. Why is this place sitting empty for more than a year? He asked as he gazed trained on the vacant Main Plaza building at 303 North Main. That's just crazy. DeLong also doesn't like the dilapidated front and center building located at 102 North Center Street, which has stood empty since owner Merrill Huff shuttered it in 2006 over concerns about asbestos, and the nearby former Commerce Bank at 120 North Center Street and former Elks Lodge at 110 North Madison Street, which are both vacant and also owned by Huff. The three buildings' conditions have raised public questions about code enforcement and whether some of the buildings should be condemned. Other large commercial spaces that have remained vacant for or nearly so for several years, include the former Pantograph building at 301 West Washington Street, which was sold in 2016 to St. Louis-based Oak LLC-Raven Development developer David Bentley's CII East Building, 102 Southeast Street, and the Frontier Building at 109 East Market Street. If you look up and down Main Streets, up and down Center and Main Streets, the majority of the smaller spaces are occupied, said Ward 1 Alderman Jamie Matthew, who owns Red Raccoon Games at 309 North Main Street. In terms of the building stock that we have downtown that is sitting empty, the majority of those spaces are big spaces. I think one of the things we have to figure out is if there is a way to subdivide those buildings into smaller spaces that are usable. I have great faith that there are a lot of behind-the-scenes efforts being made to try and get something done with those buildings, said Vicki Tilton, who co-owns the Monroe Center at 200 West Monroe Street. After considering relocating east to East Bloomington, Specs Around Town optical boutique owner Julie Kubisch decided in May to stay at her current location at 317 North Center Street. "I'm still very excited to be part of downtown," said Kubisch. "Granted, it's winter, it's slow, but our clientele is thrilled that we stayed. So much of our character is our location." She said she misses the drugstore. "We need something like that again down here because we're in there two or three times a week picking up just little things," she said. The DBA has been working with the city to find ways to make it easier for businesses to open in, said Lancaster. One of the things was a one-stop shop where one person at the city would walk prospective retailers and businesses through all of the steps in order to open or expand, said Lancaster. "We kind of feel that has gone by the wayside. The Economic Development Department is kind of new, and we would like to see them step up in the game to make sure that we aren't losing businesses to other cities. That said, we love the downtown, and we feel we are right on the cusp of being great." The private run not-for-profit DBA no longer has paid staff for its longtime executive director, Tricia Stiller, and Catherine Dunlap, who organized the DBA's downtown farmers market, became city employees in 2017 when the city created a downtown development division within the community development department. The division, which incorporated many of the DBA's current functions and allowed more of city's money to be directly invested in downtown initiatives rather than cover DBA operational expenses for rent, utilities, and salaries of the two full-time staff members, is now part of the city's Economic Development Department. Stiller has since left the city's employment. Hahn said her department posts a monthly commercial real estate report highlighting properties in downtown Bloomington. It's called https://www.citybln.org/home/show?document?id=21658, and has reached out to developers to market available downtown properties and has increased efforts to city market owner properties. If you would be interested in city market city owned properties on the edge of downtown, there's another website you can go to, and it is https://www.citybln.org/home/show blm.org/doing-business/economic-development/city-owned-property. I think we have a wonderful downtown. That said, I think it could use some love and some investment on the part of the city, said Ward 6 Alderman Jen Carello, in whose ward most of the downtown is located. She continues, I think the empty buildings certainly don't add to the experience we're trying to share with people when they come downtown. That's one of my priorities for this year, to see what can be done about that. Carrillo plans to host a public meeting on the topic April the 9th at the Bloomington Spice Works, 507 North Center Street. Attorney Tristan Bullington, whose law office is next door to the vacant CVS store, thinks downtown is going in the right direction. There's certainly more that we can do, but so far I'm happy with where it's at, said Bullington, a former chairman of the City Zoning Board of Appeals. I'm excited about what downtown has to offer with development coming into the old State Farm building. Bullington added, I think that is going to be really exciting change, making it a little bit more residential than it's been. I think that may bring some new and more exciting business. Most of my favorite restaurants are downtown. When I want to have a fun time out, downtown is the place I like to go, said Bullington. I enjoyed working downtown. It's very convenient for me to be able to walk to the courthouse. Parking is adequate and ample. I've never had issues with parking garages. They are affordable and free, depending on when you park in them. Matthew agrees. Between the restaurants and entertainment venues, it's hopping, said Matthew. And it's not just the college kids, because the bar owners are telling us that the college kids are coming out later and later in the evening. So the majority of the vibrancy you see stems from new restaurants and entertainment venues that have opened. Now, I presented a lot of facts and a couple of different websites. So if you have questions about this article, you can contact Maria Nagel at 309-820-3244, or you can follow her on Twitter at PG_Nagel, capital NAGLE. And let's go back to the front page now. Our two top national stories this week, as you probably are aware of, are number one, about President Trump, and secondly, about the Iowa caucuses. So we will go on and talk about Mr. Trump. And it says, exulting in his impeachment acquittal, a defiant Donald Trump took a scorched earth victory lap Thursday, unleashing his fury against those who tried to remove him from office and pointing ahead to his re-election campaign, triumphantly waving newspapers' front pages. Trump denounced the impeachment proceedings as a disgrace and portrayed himself as a victim of political foes he labeled scum, sleazebag, and crooked people. Hours earlier, he unleashed broadsides that stunned the crowd at an annual bipartisan prayer breakfast. It was evil, it was corrupt, it was dirty cops, Trump declared in a packaged White House East Room. Oh, in a packed White House East Room, where he was surrounded by several of his most loyal supporters. This should never, ever have happened to another president ever. He conceded nothing in regard to the charges that he improperly withheld a White House meeting and U.S. military aid in an effort to pressure Ukraine to investigate his rivals and other political opponents. We went through hell unfairly, he insisted, did nothing wrong. His comments were a clear sign that post-impeachment, Trump is emboldened with like never before as he barrels ahead in his re-election fight with the United Republican Party behind him. And his remarks stood in stark contrast to the apology offered by President Bill Clinton when he faced the American people in the aftermath of his own impeachment acquittal in 1919. In a brief Rose Garden address at that time, Clinton was somber and said, "I want to say again to the American people how profoundly sorry I am for what I said and did to trigger these events and the great burden they have imposed on the Congress and the American people." The only contrition Trump offered was to his family, apologizing for them having to go through a phony, rotten deal. Trump had plenty else to say, however, venting for more than an hour, he ticked off names of the vicious, mean people he felt had wronged him. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, Intelligence Committee Chairman Adam Schiff, former FBI Director James Comey, and he revealed in the verdict handed down by the GOP-controlled Senate Wednesday, saluting one by one the Oscar acceptance speech fashion the warrior GOP lawmakers who had backed him both in the Capitol and on television. Now we have that gorgeous word. I never thought it would sound so good, Trump said. It's called total acquittal. One person unmentioned, former New York Mayor Giuliani, whose involvement helped drive the Trump's push for the investigation that led to him first becoming the third president in the U.S. history to be impeached by the House. He was unmentioned by the president. So Rudy Giuliani was not mentioned about his involvement. Trump's remarks delivered with the aid of scribbled notes, but no teleprompter served as a dramatic contrast to his State of the Union address earlier this week. Standing before Congress on Tuesday night, Trump hewed closely to his script and offered an optimistic message to the country with no mention of impeachment. This time, his remarks were rambling and replete with profane language, comedic interludes, and plenty of tangents and asides. He ripped Ohio Representative James Jordan, a college wrestling champion, for rarely wearing a suit jacket, saying he obviously is very proud of his body, and he delivered a dramatic reading of two text messages between his two favorite targets, former FBI agent Peter Schwartz and lawyer Lisa Page, who played a role in the special counsel's investigation of the Russian interference to help Trump in the 2016 election. This is really not a press conference. It's not a speech. It's not anything, Trump remarked at one point. It's a celebration. Earlier Thursday, Trump shattered the usual veneer of bipartisanship at the National Prayer Breakfast in Washington by unleashing his fury against those who tried to impeach him, with Pelosi setting on stage. "As everybody knows, my family, our great country, and your president have been put through a terrible ordeal by some very dishonest and corrupt people," Trump said at the annual event. His remarks were especially jarring, coming after a series of scripture-quoting speeches, including a keynote address by Arthur Brooks, a Harvard professor and president of a conservative think tank, who had bemoaned a crisis of contempt and polarization in the nation and urged those who gathered to love your enemies. "I don't know if I agree with you," Trump said as he took the microphone, and then he proceeded to demonstrate it. "I don't like people who use their faith as justification for doing what they know is wrong, he said in apparent reference to Mitt Romney, a longtime Trump critic who cited his faith in becoming the only Republican to vote for Trump's removal. Nor do I like people who I pray for when you know that's not so, he said in a reference to Pelosi, who has offered that message for the president when two leaders have sparred publicly. And that concludes that article, and then we'll go back to talk about the beginning of the traditional process for electing the president, which is the canvasses that took place in the Iowa caucus for the Democratic Party this year, and that resulted in some re-canvassing, and we'll go into that here. We're back on page one with the Iowa caucus report. The chairman of the Democratic National Committee on Thursday called for a re-canvass of the results of the Iowa caucuses, saying it was needed to assure public confidence after 3 days of technical issues and delays. Enough is enough, party leader Tom Perez wrote on Twitter, with 97% reporting Pete Buttigieg, a former South Bend, Indiana, and Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders are nearly tied for the lead, and both candidates have declared themselves victorious. The Associated Press said Thursday that it is unable to declare a winner in the contest beyond the technical issues. Perez learned concerns that the Iowa Democratic Party has yet to report results from satellite caucus sites. From which there are still an unknown number of delegate equivalents to be won. Buttigieg and Sanders will emerge from Iowa's caucuses with the most delegates to the party's convention, regardless of which eventually wins. Buttigieg and Sanders have each won at least 11 national delegates, with a handful still to be awarded, according to Associated Press count. Elizabeth Warren has won at least five, while Biden won at least two, and Amy Kohlberger has at least one. The state party apologizes for the technical glitches in the Monday caucus and spent the week trying to verify the results. The problems were compounded because of the app that was rolled out shortly before the caucus began and did not go through the rigorous testing. When the phone lines for reporting the outcomes became jammed with many callers, they were placed on report outcomes. The party of officials said the backlog was exacerbated by calls from people around the country who accessed the number and appeared intent on disrupting the process. That concludes our reading of the front page, which is quite a lot of news today and a lot of information. And we will take a short break, and we'll return with the second half of the Pantograph for Friday, February the 7th, 2020. So please stay tuned.